And I don't feel that much. Seriously, Sunil and Esther really, but you really do have to learn them together, and therefore there are many parallels.
When you're speaking
Yerma, I have thinking of Yerma. Yeah, there are so many. So here we go. Firstly, how do I know that you have to learn Midel Sesser in its historical context? Because it begins, Vayibim Achashverosh Achashverosh Melech 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 Yekush. It ends with, we're still under Achashverosh's monarchy. The entire Megillah takes place from the third year of Achashverosh to the seventh year of Achashverosh to the 12th year of Achashverosh. So do I have to know who this Achashverosh is?
No.
Yes. So who is he? Do you remember we learned this in Daniel?
Oh, yeah.
That it seems as if, according to Chazal, that there are that actually those Koresh, Achashverosh, Dayavish, again, who's really Artaxasta, but really there are a lot of kings. As a matter of fact, the real history is as such. We have Koresh, and then Cambuzi, and then Dayavish, and then Achashverosh, and then Artaxasta. And then another Achashverosh, and another Artaxasta, and another Dayavish, and ultimately the last of the 10 kings of Persia will be destroyed by Alexander the Great in the year 312, which is the beginning of Minyan Shtarot. Remember this we discussed? Ah, what does that tell you? Wait a second. Chazal said that this is Achashverosh of Megillat Esther, and therefore it must be that Achashverosh is celebrating the fact that even though Koresh allowed for the Jews to return in 535 BCE, guess what? They're still in Chutzlaret. You want to see? It is much worse than that. Because this is Cambuzi, it's not Achashverosh. Achashverosh was when Daryavish allows, in the year 520 BCE, for Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. By the year 516 BCE, exactly 70 years after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash in 586 BCE, the Jews now have a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Where is the story of Purim taking place? It's taking place in Shushan, under the reign of Achashverosh, who lives in 485 BCE. Why is this a terrible story? That means that there are Jews living in Chutzlaret in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. How could that be? Right? I wonder. Right? I always think about, oh my gosh, can you imagine if the Beit HaMikdash was built tomorrow and Jews are only going to come for the Shol Shvagalim and not sign up for Nefesh B'Nefesh? But back to this for a moment. Now we're going to see something amazing. Take a look. And that's exactly what the authors are trying to tell you. You have to understand this time period if you really understand the message. There's only one other city in the entire Tanakh that's called Habirah. Take a guess what it is? Yerushalayim. It's Divrei HaYamim, which is very interesting. This is the time period. Very nice, right? Oh, so we told you this.
No, just this.
It was in the context of school.
Okay, so based on this, we see that the authors criticizing the people. Why are you looking at Shushan as Habirah? That's like looking at New York as Yerushalayim. Shame on you, right? And now he's going to continue to also criticize them. Notice that we always learn Megillat Esther the same way in 12th grade that we learned in the kindergarten. Isn't that what it said? That it's all King Cole who's having a party. No. In the third year of his malchut, he was fighting a naval war against the Greek navy of Salamis, and he won the war. And now his malchut is established, and he has to create strategy. So he has what are called Pentagon parties, Chel, Parasumadai. These are the party officers who are going to come, and they develop strategies during the day. They party all at night, and he shows off, look carefully, Osher Kavod Malchuto Vedikar Teferet Tzulato. There's only one other place in Tanakh where the words Kavod and Teferet are juxtaposed like this. This Parshat Tzatzah, which 99% of the time falls out as Parshat Zachor, wherein the big Zeguna are described as Lo Kavod and Teferet. What does he say? Shame on you, you're looking at the palace of the king as Kavod and Teferet. Whereas what should you be doing? You should be looking at Yerushalayim as Habirah, and Hashem is your Melech instead of this Achashverosh personality. And you should not be b'chatzar ginat b'itan HaMelech. You should be b'chatzar ginat b'itan Beit HaMikdash. And you should not be looking at the Kavan and Tiferet of this king, but rather big tikkun on the Beit HaMikdash. Are you all getting the point a little?
Yeah.
In other words, how is the story really turned as a satire? Right? You've heard about the genre of literature wherein he wants the people to laugh at themselves. Why doesn't he just give them open rebuke? Shame on you for still living in Kutzlar as one of those Beit HaMikdash.
It's a type of musar when
it's
you
a
like
subtle musar.
You give like an example and then you realize you have them.
Very nice. You know that this is done politically all the time, again, with elephants and donkeys. What do I mean by this? Instead of writing openly about what the Republicans and Democrats, I'll just write about, again, how strange the donkeys and the elephants are. So note that, again, that this is exactly how it's written, so much so that Chazal themselves don't want to include the Sefer because it really is strange. You know, Shem Hashem, a woman who intermarries, the story takes place in Chutzaretz, how can we include this amongst the canon, which is meant to be anti-Hellenistic? Esther, according to Masecha Megillah, writes to Anshei Knesset Hadol, which is very anachronistic. She's living 300 years earlier. But she writes to them, Kitzvuni l'dorot. She tries to impress upon them how important it is to include the Sefer, and Kivuni, an established Purim, which tells us that Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael did not want Purim to be established. So ultimately they did, but in a different way. That's a shiur. Hopefully we'll save that for next week. But what I do want to show you is that they're writing, basically Esther has to convince them, no, there's really a message in disguise here. It's really a satire. I'll tell you a true story. I went to a shul in Eretz Yisrael, and I picked up from the Geniza, sorry, in papers from a sitter from Chumash, and then I see the 10 rules of this Beit Knesset. Rule number one, doctors have to sit in the first 5 rows, then lawyers, then dentists, then high tech, to maximize conversation during Kriyas HaTorah. Next, during Chazar Tashat's, decibel levels have to exceed 14. Next rule, when women come into the Beit HaKnesset, please wear your most bombastic attire to provide for sufficient gossip. What do you realize after a while?
Oh, actually, no.
But if this is going to be placed in the Geniza, together with the Sidurim and the Chumash, and then 2,000 years from now, someone's going to cover this, and they may think, wow, strange rules in the Beit HaKnesset in the 21st century in Eretz Yisrael. Again, not understanding the proper context. That's why we misunderstand the Megillat Esther, because you don't understand the context of what's going on. There's a Beit HaMikdash, and the Jews aren't there, and there are wars going on between the Persians and the Greeks, and ultimately, by the way, what happens after 180 days? That's a 6-month party. That means either Tishrei or Nisan or Nisan Tishrei, however you look at it, after that there's a 7-day party. B'chatzar cannot be Tan HaMelech. And what 7-day party do we have at the beginning of Nisan, at the beginning of Tishrei? Not just Pesach and Sukkot, but the either Shabbat Yimei HaMiluim for the Mishkan in Nisan, or Shabbat Yimei HaMiluim for the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo in Tishrei. Notice how this works. He's criticizing them. Shame on you for being here in the Chatzer of the king instead of by the Beis HaMikdash. The big chet that you know, Chazal say, is a reference to the Shmona Big Day Kahuna. Does it make sense that they're really using the kingdom of the Beis HaMikdash? No, because Koresh allowed the Jews to go back with the kingdom. Rather, he's writing them in such a way where one is supposed to note and be sensitive to what's going on. I'll just give you another example as you take a look. Gam Vashti HaMaka Astam Mishteh. What happens to Vashti? She's asked to come and appear in front of the king. Is that a rightful request of the king during this time, pre-feminist age? Yes, yeah. Right? And what is a queen supposed to do?
Yeah.
She is the trophy wife, right? She's supposed to go. What is her punishment because she doesn't? Banishment, death, we find out at the end, that's right. And then letters go out saying, again, make sure that no one does this because it's anathema. How could someone do this? Rather, the yotz kolish, so wherever they told, the man has to be the master of the house and the davar kushon hamot. Mind if I ask you before these letters went out? Again, pre-feminist times, do you think that the man was the master of his home?
Yeah.
Yes. What are the authors trying to say? Isn't this interesting? The wife of the king, when is wife of king used in Tanakh as a mashal for the relationship between Hashem and Am Yisrael? When the queen doesn't appear before the king, why would the king want the queen to appear? Larot et osher kvod machuto la'inei kol sarav avadav. One of the functions of the Beis HaMikdash is for Am Yisrael to serve as an or lagoyim. And the king asked the queen to appear in the palace on his behalf, and the queen said no.
Wow.
What happens when you say no to the king's request to appear before him? 100%. We have never heard such an event happening. What happens? Then the letters have to go out to remind all of you that you, instead of being second-class citizens in Persia, Liot Kol Iso River Beito, what are you doing? Anna being here, Anna Tinek, a second-class citizen, when you can do what? When you can have autonomy in Eretz Yisrael. What are you doing speaking Yiddish? I don't know, Spanish, English. When you could, Medaber Kolshon Amo. When you should be speaking the language of your lands, the language of your people. And sure enough, what happens to such a society? They're going to be punished with possible genocide.
So Vashti's the Jews.
Vashti is a mashal for the Jews.
And Achashverosh.
Anytime, Chazal already said that. Anytime you find Hamelach without Achashverosh, you should leave it as Hashem. So now, back to this, by the way, Mordechai Yehudi. Anna, Ayam, Yisraeli, was taken out. Notice this, by the way. How is Mordechai presented to us? Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shir, Ben Mekish, Shishbin Asher, Habla, Yerushalayim, Em Hagola, Asher, Hablata, Yim, Yachon, Yam, Malach, Yehuda. Now, do you mind if I ask you based on this? This is the year, it's the third year of Achashverosh, so it's 42 BCE. We just learned that Galut Yehoyachin was in 597. So based on this, if Mordechai was really Asher Hoglam Yerushalayim, if he was part of Galut Yehoyachin, then he's over 110 years now. Okay, do you see this? Mordechai wasn't part of Galut Yehoyachin, rather, Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Asher Hoglam Yerushalayim. He's my grandfather, who probably raised him every night, saying, Mati, one day you're going to go back to Yerushalayim. Again, this is a legacy that Mordechai is brought up with. But this is a little strange, because in Sefer Ezra, we find that in 535, amongst the list of the people who returned originally to Eretz Yisrael, there was someone named Mordechai Ben Kish, a very popular Binyamite name, but nonetheless tells you something. So what is Mordechai, who believes in Aliyah, what is he doing in the Chutzlar, right? He's a Shaliach Ben Akiva. And he thinks that if he's there for long enough, he can encourage the people to make Aliyah. So he's going to try the satire and see whether or not it works. So he writes about the danger of the Jewish people, and how we're vulnerable, obviously, to genocide. Notice, by the way, even the names, Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai is Marduk, Esther is Ashtaroth. These are the respective gods and goddesses of Avos. I think you're told, Christopher and Christina, don't do that. Then here we see that even they, the leaders, have assumed these names out of assimilation. By the way, how does Haman convince the king that we should really apply the final solution here? Because he says in Ha'amim. Is that true? Are the Jews dispersed amongst all the nations? Yes, and therefore that's a good reason to get rid of them. Because no one's going to even notice that they're missing because they're so dispersed. Right? By the way, what does that tell you? That if we all get together in the lands of Israel, then
you can't
really just destroy a nation. Right? Number one. Is it true? Our religion is different than the other. But they're not even listening to their religion. So they have a different religion, but they're not really religious people, so can we get rid of them? Yes, no one's really going to notice that they're gone. Notice what's so sad about Haman's argument.
It's true.
And that's exactly what the authors are trying to say. Like, no, what's wrong with you guys? And that's exactly how Haman convinces Ahasuerus, look, you're in debt now. It's the seventh year. You're in debt because now they lost the war against the Greeks. So the best thing is, I'll fill your treasury now. We'll kill the Jews. We'll bring you the money and everything will be just fine. Notice that that's exactly what's going on. Obviously, the subtext here with the beauty contest and all the mishteh, that's the motif of Megillat Esther, is describing the culture. We live in a culture of Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire? Anyone know that show?
Yeah.
I remember making Aliyah around the time that it came out. I'm thinking, Baruch Hashem, I'm moving to Israel, where it's not part of the culture, right, for a millionaire to go interview three, you know, girls on television and decide who he wants to marry based on all these superficialities, right? That's what's going on over here. Sadly enough, a few years later, they put it on over here. But, again, whatever the case is, note that that's what's going on, not only in the beauty contest. Rabbi Dan likes to point out that there are more words describing the beauty contest of Perek Bet than there are in all of Shema Yisrael. Again, tells you something. Notice, by the way, all the Mishteh also, Hashliach Hadas, Eino Neis, Kichein Yisad HaMelech, back to Perek Aleph for a moment, Yisad HaMelech, that's a weird word, that the king founded, that you have to drink. And no, Yisad comes from Chadai, Yom Yisad Hichal Hashem. Shouldn't you be in the place of the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash instead of a place where they found a decree that everyone drinks however much they want? Let's continue now, or because of lack of time, let's turn even to Perek Tet. Do they get the message, or even Perek Tet, do they get the message of their lives in Galut? Do they get the message that they have to pick up and go? Again, Paraklet, Pasuk, Tet. And who remembers, when do the letters go out? Declaring genocide, the poor happens on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The letters go out on?
Gimel
Nisan. Right, when are the letters not repealed, but they're amended so that Jews can defend themselves? Just as you Paraklet. Again, Pasuk, Tet, Chav Gimel, Sivan. How many days is this? How many days are Jews living in terror with fear of genocide? 2 months and 10 days?
70 days.
Are you familiar with the concept of Yom L'Shana? Yom L'Shana? Remember the Meraglim? For every day that they were in Eretz Yisrael, they're punished with a year in the Midbar. Yecheskel is told he has to lie on his side for 430 days. Can I get the years of sins of Am Yisrael? So we have days for years. That's a concept in Tanakh known as Yom L'Shana, Yom L'Shana. A day for a year. Oh my gosh, they're living in fear of losing their entire identity for 70 days. Why? They've been in Galut for over 70 years. They get the message of Galut. What's the message of Galut? In Chutz Aretz, you don't have a national identity. What do you have to do at the end of Galut? You have to initiate return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu so that he'll return you to Eretz Yisrael. Did Am Yisrael get that message?
No.
Obviously not, if they're still in Shushan. And therefore, then Hashem puts them through, and this is what Mordechai is trying to express, Hashem is putting you through a microcosm of the Galut. Everyone see that?
Yeah.
With this then, we just end off by seeing how the hope is that after all this, they'll recognize, they'll be victorious, and what does Mordechai say? We're going to slowly but surely establish this Hakana so that you'll always remember this, and Mishloach Mana, we're going to unite ourselves because we're getting ready to go home. How do I know that? take a look. He reminds them. Perek Tet, Pasuk Abdalit. Ki amandam amdatai dajit tzarek alayitim kasham lidim ladam. Yitul kur ho agarau lum mamul abdam. We have our poor, our, by the way, the poor is called Goral Lefnei Haman. We have a Goral Lefnei Hashem. That's the Azazel and the Beit HaMikdash, right? The Seer LaHashem. So another parallel there. So shame on you. What are you doing being subject to the fatalistic, deterministic poor of these non-Jews? Go back and change your fate, right? That's what the Seer LaHashem is all about.
It was Esther in this whole thing.
Very nice. Esther and Mordechai are real characters who are shlichim, who are, oh, so even she writes about herself negatively. Right, that she is in a culture in which you're not in control, right? Amongst the assimilated Gentiles, you're taking Fatila Kachester Beit HaMachut, right? You don't have your own choice. And what happens to her between years 7 and 12? She hears that Mordechai is outside of the gate, again, in sackcloth. Batachalchal HaMacha Ma'od. And she's sick. Why? Not because she heard about the decree of the Jews. She probably knows about it, but because she's so embarrassed. She's not wearing my Armani suit that I gave him. Again, oh my gosh, what's happened to Esther?
They're just like people in Gullus who are like...
Even Esther, she writes about Esther, she has become totally materialistically assimilated. How do you like that? You don't. And that's why Mordechai gives her, that's why she doesn't talk to him for a while, right? They're talking different languages with Hatach between them. And finally, Mordechai says, again, fine, you should know. Again, you want to use the Malchut to escape? You can do that. But Rebbe Chatzila, Yabom Yudin mi makom acher. What makom acher? It's okay, so Jews of Babylonians, it's not the end of the world. It's really not. Why? Because there will be salvation for the Jewish people from a different place. What place? Eretz Yisrael, right? There's another community with 32,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So it's okay, we'll be destroyed and they'll be the Shevites. Yeah, but just know that you and your father's home are going to be completely lost. And Yodam, because of the Ba'al Machud, he basically encourages her to leave her passivity and to become a proactive person. This is where she transforms herself from a secondary character to a primary character. Right? Something very significant. Note that this is how Esther is reminded to us in the end. She's called Bat Abichayo, right? Because she preserved her father's house in the end. But let's take a look. And what happens? Everyone noticed the danger that they were in. So what they decide to do? So kimu. They decided, that's it, we're signing our nefesh for nefesh forms. The kiblu. But then what happened? Oh, I had elderly parents and chutzars. Okay, I know what I'll do. I'll send my children to Moshavat, the Azaram. So I'm not going to make Aliyah, but it's okay, I got the message, because my children will make Aliyah. Let's see what happens just a few years later. Pasuk Chachet. Hayimim ha'ilin nizkarim v'nasim b'choldor. Before Nasim, they became nizkarim. They became a memory. And lo and behold, the days didn't pass. V'zichram lo yosuf mizaram. They became all but a faded memory to the people. It's like having blue on white cupcakes on Yom Ha'atzmaut. Right? That's all what, again, these days became to the people. Instead of actually fulfilling them, they just went through the actions. How do I know that? Because look at Pasuk Chachet. Esther is very frustrated, so she writes an addendum. We'll call this Megillat Esther, second edition. Right? She adds a little appendix over here, and she encourages them to do something. Note she writes, Degrei Shalom Be'emet. What does it mean? She writes words of peace and truth. If you look in Zechariah Perek Zayin, when Babylonian officers come years before Esther to ask Zechariah, what do we do? We see the Beis HaMikdash is being built. Do we still have to fast on Tisha B'Av? What's the answer Zechariah gives him? He says, it's not up to me. It's not even up to God. It's up to you. Are you going to promote Shalom Ve'emet? Are you going to promote peace and truth in your societies? And if you do, then these fast days will be transformed into days of happiness. And now, what do the people of Babel do? Do they decide to come back to Eretz Yisrael, speak words of Divrei Shalom Ve'emet? Let's take a look. She encourages them, remember the words of Zechariah, come back to Eretz Yisrael, come back and transform the Tzomot of the Korban into days of Simcha. Rashi says, they accepted Tanis Esther. Even Esther says Tanis Esther was a 3-day holiday. We only accept a 3-day fast. We only accepted a 1-day fast. What Tzomot do they accept? Did they have Tzomot? They decided, you know, better to live in the five towns and fast 4 days a year for the Chorban than to leave all this and to move to Eretz Yisrael. So they decided to accept the fast versus accepting Divrei Shalom Ve'emet. What happens as a result? The Jews end up staying. This is not a happily ever after story, everyone. Do you see that? Yeah. It's once upon a time we lived and we stayed in Chutz La'aretz, and that's why Perek Yud ends the same way that Perek Aleph began, but this time we're not only under the Persian regime, but also subject to attacks. But don't worry, Kimarachai Hayudi, Mishnah Macha Hashirosh, Gadol is in Ratsu the Rabbah to Rishnah. The Rashal Machosaro, it is a terrible ending. Why ended up staying? Why did he stay? He said, if this generation that actually experienced those salvations, we get the message, then I'll stay for the next one. Maybe I can influence. Yeah, no, that's exactly what it says at the end. Vidzover shalom l'chol zaro. The hope is that maybe the next generations will come. I don't know if you know this. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't want to accept Purim. Not only do they not want to include Megillah Esther in Tanakh. Why? Because Mordechai established that there should be Purim in all the Arei HaPrazot. What are Arei HaPrazot? The provinces. And there should be Shushan Purim where? In the capital city. Why? No, that was, look at Megillah Esther. It has nothing to do with walled and unwalled. It's Shushan in, outside of Shushan. Right, what happened though? Sanhedrin said, we don't want a Chutzlaretz holiday, but we're going to celebrate the provinces, meaning what defines provinces outside of Shushan versus Shushan. So finally they said, fine. Again, we will accept this holiday. As a matter of fact, it becomes part of the Gilat Hanut, which means that you're not allowed to fast on Purim. We'll accept the holiday, but on one condition, that we change the focus. The focus is not going to be Shushan and outside of Shushan. What's the focus going to be instead? They redefine Arei Prazot the way that it appears in Sefer Dvarim. Prazot in Sefer Dvarim upon Am Yisrael's limited entrance to the land means walled or unwalled. In all the walled cities during the time of Yehoshua ben Nun's conquest, which happened 800 years before the story of Purim, that's when we'll celebrate on the 15th. And in the unwalled cities, that's how we're going to define Prazot. What are they basically saying? Shift your focus, everyone. Again, don't think of this as a Shushan and an outside Shushan holiday. Think of it as a conquering Eretz Yisrael holiday. How do you like that? The walled and the unwalled cities. Because the whole point of the story was to teach the Jews that they're not meant to be in Shushan. They're not meant to be in Chutz La'aretz. This is a story that, you're right, ends very sadly for the Jewish people. In which case, I'll make you feel better. Can you be happy? Can you celebrate Purim in Eretz Yisrael?
You're there.
Yes, you're there. You got the message. You're celebrating the conquest of Yehoshua. Again, coming back to the land. And how about in 2 years when you go back to Chutz La'aretz?
That's a sad holiday.
That's a very sad holiday.
I could think like a sad tire for yourself.
Very nice. Again, the whole goal. That's why you haven't read it. It's a sad tire in America. But you read it. It's a very simplistic kindergarten story. Why? Because it's a true meaning of the story. It's too hard to internalize. But if you pull up your parents and you teach them this, that's right, and you make sure that they don't deny it, then maybe they can really maybe they can transform the days of Purim from days where they should be laughing at themselves to days where we can transform the Talmud into the Yamim of Sasson and Simcha. Sorry,
Yeah.